Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Killer Minute podcast, brought to you always by Killer Frogs. I'm Davis Wilson, the host of the Killer Minute. And I'll just tell you, this episode was really fun. Maybe my favorite one that I've done. We had Brett Gibbons on, who is a Killer Frogs colleague of mine, a huge college football guy, huge draft guy. He came on and we talked about TCU's guys who could go in the draft, you know, where they'll go, what it'll look like, what just the draft could look like for TCU. Could be one of the biggest ones we've seen in a long time, but really fun conversation. So stick around for that. But first, just really quickly, I wanted to touch on some basketball transfer portal stuff. I talked about it last week, a couple of the targets. You know, we knew we had Jameer Nelson Jr. in the fold, but a couple things have happened since my last episode. Trey Tennyson, I talked about him, 40% three-point shooter, 15 a game at Texas A&M Corpus Christi. The day I recorded the podcast, he commits. So, boom, I nailed that one. Asam Mustafa, the 6'9 big man from Coastal Carolina, also, like the day of or a day after I did the podcast, he committed. So 2 for 2. I'm really all over it right now, feeling very good. And then Avery Anderson, Primo Spears, nothing new on them yet. I think both are visiting TCU this week. Both either have or are going to. So Jamie Dixon, very active in the portal. Thank goodness for that. He is because you have to in this era. So anyway, I'm going to stop talking about basketball. We're going to get to some football with Brett right now on the Killer Minute. All right, welcome back to the Killer Minute podcast. Today is a special episode I'm really excited about. We've got Killer Frogs colleague of mine, Brett Gibbons, on the podcast. Brett, thanks for coming on and doing this for me.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to, I won't spoil the topic yet, but I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah. So what we're going to do, and Brett had an article published on Killer Frogs 2 days ago, going through TCU draft prospect mock drafts, basically where they could end up. And I kind of wanted to make it into a podcast version and have him on. So I just wanted to start with, your article mentioned like there's upwards of 10 guys who could be drafted, right? And just basically, I wanted to know, like, how does the potential of this TCU draft class stack up historically at TCU? Because I've been a TCU fan for a long time and they've always produced guys, but the number of guys that have a chance to get drafted this year seems to be a lot higher than usual.
Yeah, definitely. Considering there were zero last year, 10 is quite a turnaround. I'm not 100% confident every single one of them will get drafted. But, you know, we'll see. I think all of them will end up on a roster. In terms of historic draft classes, someone could come in and correct me. And please correct me if I am wrong here. I do believe this is the most number of Horned Frogs that could go in an NFL draft. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's pretty crazy. I guess it makes sense coming off a national championship run, but a lot of guys could get drafted. And I want to kind of dive in. So there's always a guy in the draft that goes a lot earlier than we think. You know, we do mock drafts all year long. And then there's a guy always that goes earlier than you may expect. And my question is, you know, who's that? Who could be that guy for TCU? I've seen a lot of stuff on Steve Avila. I mean, a lot of people have him going in the early second round, but I've seen some stuff. Maybe he ends up in the first round. I've even seen some stuff. He ends up in Dallas at 26. So that's kind of someone I think of. But what are your thoughts on a guy who could kind of jump up?
I'd have to go with Steve Avila, but just for the sake of men, another name, Max Duggan. I mean, that's kind of a cop out. But if you look at his average draft rank, he's in the mid to late 200s, which would put him in the seventh round. I don't know if he's going to drop all the way to the seventh round just because he's quarterback 9. Mel Kiper has him at quarterback 9, and the Draft Network has him at quarterback 9. So I think with interest in like Dallas and a couple of teams, And kind of a some see it as a weaker draft class. I think that Duggan could be someone that goes as high possibly as the fifth round, just based on positional value alone. But I think the correct answer here is Steve Avila. I have him in the high second. Late first wouldn't surprise me at all. It's kind of down to him and Florida's Osiris Torrence when you're talking about true guard prospects.
Mm-hmm. So we just more on Steve Avila. What is it that is what is it that makes it possible for him to be a first round guy?
The need for sure. It's tough because the interior offensive linemen kind of fall by the way of the safety and the running back, where they're not really a premium position. I don't know if anymore is the right word for it. Certainly for running back, it's the right word for it. But it's just that you don't get a lot of true guards. A lot of NFL guards are tackles that get brought inside. And honestly, a lot of centers that get bumped outside, because you're looking at it, you have 133 FBS teams this coming year. So you have 133 starting centers. And if you think about just the power fives or even the guys in the draft, you get 7 or 8 true centers a year. And, only one can play on the field at one time. Those tend to get drafted a little bit faster, and then a bunch of them get kicked out to guard. So that's why it's tough when you're drafting guards here. But, I mean, he's just someone who's just impressed over and over again between the combine and the pro day, and even just his play throughout the season, to where he is a rising draft stock at the moment.
Mm-hmm. I was at the combine in Fort Worth, and he had a great day and looked really good. So kind of inversely of a guy who rises, there's also a guy who falls. And, you mentioned it in your article. There's been some talk about Quentin Johnston, who I love and I think should be a first-round guy for sure. But there's been talk of him kind of falling. Can you talk a little bit about what it is, why it is that he's falling? Because I know, maybe the combine, he had some drops. And although I thought he had an overall pretty good day at the combine, he dropped some balls, and there's these concerns. But I'd love it if you could talk about it, and why is it that some people think Quentin could fall a little bit farther than we may think?
Yeah, a lot of things with the draft is not necessarily what is your evaluation of the player. What do you think of the player? Well, are they even going to translate to be a good prospect? Is how does the NFL view them? And right now, the word out is that they're not really high on this receiver class overall. And it really is the drops with Quinn. He's the biggest receiver in the class of the top, first or second round guys, but can't catch the ball. That's tough. You can create as much separation as you want. And he does a good job of that. He's very fast. And again, when you're dealing with this receiver class, most guys are 5'9", 5'10", 160, 180 pounds. And then you have Quentin Johnston, who's 6'3". So teams are going to view him, and that's why I don't think he's really going to fall out of the first round. I think a lot of this don't see him as a first-round prospect is kind of smoke. I don't really believe that. It could be Baltimore saying that, could be Minnesota saying that, could be Jacksonville, any of these kind of back half of the first round teams that want him, they're saying, I don't know, league sources say he's not a first round guy, and then jump on the opportunity to get it. But the bottom line is, guys that have a lot of drops in college do not translate very well to the NFL, especially those big body receivers you see recently. Calvin Benjamin, I know that's, well, mm-hmm. I guess that's not really recent anymore. That was almost a decade ago.
Yeah.
But he was a big body receiver, struggled with some drops, and he was in and out of the league in a flash. So if you don't see the improvement from Quentin Johnson's hands, he could be in and out of the league really fast. But I do think that given the fact that this receiver class is very small, very prototypical, they're very similar to each other, not prototypical, but similar to each other. And Quentin Johnson is more the prototypical NFL wide receiver that we see. I think he's going to go in the first round on that reason alone.
Mm-hmm. Immediately following the playoffs and the national championship game, I, at least on my Twitter feed, there was a lot of stuff about him maybe going, like, maybe being the first receiver off the board, going to Houston or New England or something. And that still could happen. We don't know. But what is it that is it the combine that happened since then that's kind of changed the way some people have seen him? Or is it just that people are kind of getting the Michigan game out of their head and just looking at the prospect himself?
I don't actually know if it's really Quentin Johnston's fault that he's falling. I think it's a lot of they're starting to see these other prospects, and you'll see the Ohio State jerseys hanging behind me, so you know who I'm going to talk about. But Jackson Smith and Jigba did not play hardly at all. He had 7 catches all year, and I think that he's one of those guys where people kind of forgot about him for a minute, and then they went back and reviewed the 2021 tape, and they're like, holy crap, this guy outproduced 2 first round receivers and a future first round receiver in Marvin Harrison Jr., that he was the best guy on that team by far. So I think they kind of recalibrated. I think if Jaxon Smith-Njigba had played all season and, you know, maybe not done as well as 2021, but still produced, I think he would have been the consensus wide receiver one from day one. And then Quentin Johnson, you're working with wide receiver two. Now, it's interesting because his other competition, Jordan Addison out of USC, has also fallen down the draft boards quite a bit. And in his place, Zay Flowers of Boston College has jumped up. There's been a lot of smoke about him to New England as high as 14, maybe the Chargers at 22. And, you know, some of these other guys popping in their background, maybe Jalen Hyatt, the Biletnikoff Award winner. But I don't really think it's necessarily an indictment on Johnson himself, more so just the other teams are starting to value these other receivers a little bit more in a class where wide receiver really isn't as strong as we've seen it recently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jaxon Smith-Njigba is from my area. He went to school, high school, pretty close, so I love him. And you mentioned all these guys, but my next question was, if you had to rank, like, we'll say those top guys, top five, maybe Jordan Addison, Quentin, Jaxon Smith, Zay Flowers, and Jalen Hyatt, how would you rank those five guys just on your judgment alone?
Boy, that's a great question. If you're talking about in terms of the order in which I think they'll go, yeah. Jaxon Smith-Njigba probably number one. I buy the smoke on Zay Flowers, so I think he's probably going to go as the second wide receiver. And then Quentin Johnson just isn't going to fall much later than that. I really don't think teams view Jordan Addison all that well, especially since he ran a 4.52 or something, 4.48, something like that at the combine, which, like, that's fast, but it's not really fast, especially in this class where guys are sub 4.4 pretty consistently. So I think people had a lot of concern about his straight line speed, a little bit of three cone drill. So I think he'll fall behind Quentin Johnson. So I put Quentin Johnson third. And I think Jalen Hyatt can really pop up. And you know, if Kansas City doesn't move out of 32, they may scoop him up with that last pick there. That's probably going out on a limb a little bit too much. That's not really how I see them. If I'm an NFL GM and I'm drafting these guys, I actually wouldn't put them in that order. Besides Jaxon Smith-Njigba being one, I hate to say it, I think I would drop Quentin Johnson down. I can't have a guy that can't catch. And drops were a huge problem of his. I mean, he had a 14% drop rate. That's 5% higher than any of these other guys in that kind of top tier first round class. And it's just, it's tough. But again, big bodied receiver. I'm afraid teams are going to use him wrong. I think they're going to maybe try to be like, oh, he's going to be our jump ball guy in the red zone. Well, that's not really how he's used very well. You run him, you send him deep down the field, or you run him in shallow drags, get the ball in his hand and watch him go. Cause he's super fast. And we saw that at the combine, but in terms of what order I think they'll go in the draft, Jaxon Smith-Njigba, Zay Flowers, just because of the team connections, Quentin Johnson, Jordan Addison, Jalen Hyatt.
Okay. So for Quentin, you mentioned guys or people talk, you know, the fear of using him wrong. And that's it. That is because he's so tall. He's 6'4". He's huge. And people immediately think of those guys like a red zone threat, you know, throw it up and he'll go get it. My question is, if you had to compare him to an NFL wide receiver that you've watched, it doesn't have to be a guy who's playing now. It can be anyone, but just for people that kind of understand the prospect that he really is, who would you kind of draw a comparison to?
It's a really good question and something I haven't really thought of all that much. It's hard not to draw the comparison to Kelvin Benjamin just because he's a big, fast guy. Kelvin Benjamin eventually put on so much weight that they moved him to tight end, weighing at like 250, 260. I don't think that's quite it. If you think, you know, big possession receivers, this is a big stretch, but AJ Brown kind of plays that way where you want to get him the ball in the shallow. That is I need to be clear. That is an absolute ceiling.
That's like
best case scenario. Yeah. AJ Brown's one of the top 10 receivers in the NFL. So if he checks out like that, that is a home run pick no matter where you picked him. If you picked him at 11 and he turns out to be AJ Brown, that's great. I think he plays probably the most like him, but again, that floor can be a Kelvin Benjamin. I keep using that. So think of that. Those are two very polar opposite ends of the spectrum, but you know, that's kind of how I see it going, best case and worst case.
Yeah. So another intriguing guy that I would love to talk about is Kendre Miller. We didn't see him in the national championship game. But we didn't see him at the combo, or we didn't see him at pro day. I saw at pro day, I watched him. He had a really long conversation with Belichick and Dable both talked to him. So basically I'm wondering, what is his where would you put his range?
I mocked him in the fifth round. Again, that's just unfortunately positional value there. He could probably go higher than that, maybe round four. This is a pretty deep running back class, but Kendre is up there, you know, maybe fourth, fifth kind of ranked guy, depending on where you look. I actually sent him to Dallas because he does what Dallas likes. He's a bigger body. He's got really good speed and he seeks contact. And Dallas has just let go of Zeke. Tony Pollard suffered that horrific, horrific injury at the end of the year. He will be ready to play at the beginning of the year, but you know, they can't just have, contract year. He's not a three down running back. Mm. And I think Kendre Miller really fits into their system that they like. He did have a top 30 visit with Dallas. He also met with the Rams, Saints, Giants, Cardinals, Bills, and Panthers. Those are the top 30. That doesn't mean those are the only teams he can go to, but you know, it kind of adds up that, well, maybe the Rams would pull a trigger on him earlier, but like him, Dallas in the fifth round. He's someone who I think will translate better to more production than maybe other running backs drafted ahead of him if he goes to the right spot. I know fantasy football circles are pretty excited about Kendre Miller. Some of them have him as high as like the fourth rookie running back on the board, which that's pretty good. It's really going to come down to opportunity in that case, and I think Dallas will give him an opportunity.
I hate to keep making you draw these comparisons, but is there a guy that you think of when you see Kendre play? I've seen some like Jeff Wilson Jr. is a guy that I kept seeing as I did some research, but I was curious what you thought.
Jeff Wilson's interesting. I think Jeff Wilson's a little bit faster than Kendre Miller. I think Jeff Wilson's like a mid 4.3, high 4.3 type of guy. And Kendre's fast too. Don't get me wrong. I don't know if I have an exact comparison. I can just think of like the type of player that I see him in as maybe a two down back in Buffalo's system. That'd really be interesting. They brought in a couple of guys this offseason, but there still is a need for running back there. And if Kendre Miller was in that system, that'd be interesting.
That'd be fun.
I think he'd be more of the more Devin Singletary. I'm not drawing comparison Devin Singletary, but he'd probably be in the Devin Singletary role where he's first and second down. You bring James Cook in, pass catcher on third down. More in that role, but I think he's going to be a solid two down back for a team that really wants a guy that's just going to beat some of the defense up. And even though he's not the biggest, he's not Zach Charbonnet, he's not weighing at 230 or anything like that, but he does seek contact. I mean, when you watched him, the last tape I looked at him was against Kansas State. Every run he had at the very end, it's kind of almost Ezekiel Elliott-ish, where he might be by the sideline and he's going down. But buddy, you're coming down with him. He's not taking the easy way out and stepping out of bounds. He's going to lower your shoulder and he's going to get one good crack at you.
Mm-hmm. All right. So that was a lot of offense. And I know we haven't talked Max Duggan, and I'm trying to save that for the end because that's the one I really want to talk about. But I want to move to defense a little bit because a lot of offense we've talked about. And there's a couple pretty intriguing defensive prospects, Travis Hodges-Tomlinson, and then Dylan Horton, D Winners, two guys who had massive semifinal games. I guess we'll start with Trey Hodges-Tomlinson. He's really small. He didn't even get the invite to the Senior Bowl because of that. What kind of prospect is he? And I guess what kind of cornerback do you see him being in the NFL?
Yeah, he's a system guy. He's a guy where, okay, he didn't get the invite to the Senior Bowl, but you kind of know how he plays. He's not that 6'1 lengthy guy like you see with Devin Witherspoon, Christian Gonzalez, those kind of guys. Those are going to be your outside corners. I think Trey is going to be a nice slot corner for somebody. And that somebody I think could be the New York Giants. I have him there in the third round at the 89th overall pick. When Trevise was in man coverage this year, he allowed 25.8% completion. That is absurd. That's a very, very low. He struggled a little bit in zone, but 25% completion thrown at him, 26%. The Giants run a lot of man coverage. They were among, you know, if you go to PFF and you sort by whether they ran man or zone, man coverage, it's like Giants, 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 Miami. Like it's just all these guys from the Giants. They love running their man. And that's why I think Hodges-Tomlinson is going to fit in pretty nicely with them. Again, slot corner guy. They have a couple of corners on the roster right now that are really talented, but they're both 30 years old and older at this coming year, I should say. Bradberry and drawing a blank on the other one, but both of their guys are over 30 years old. So I think they're going to be planning for the future. You get Trevias in there. He's a good man coverage guy. He's going to fit what they want to do. And if he lands on the Giants, he's going to have a nice career, and he's going to have a nice season this year, because I think Giants could be pretty good. So that's one team I'm really looking at. If you want to send him to Miami, sure. They're kind of deep at the cornerback position, so I don't know if they're necessarily going to be using that, especially without a first round pick. They're going to be, you know, getting positions of need there. So I think he fits in with the Giants. That kind of spot 89 is a couple of spots higher than his average rank, which is 95th. But right in that kind of range, I think would be good for him.
Yeah. He's 5'8". He's really small, and there have been cornerbacks who've been little and succeeded. I'm curious to know what you think, like, what is his, like, I guess, what's his ceiling? Like, what does his career look like if everything goes well and he just is this lockdown guy?
I know a lot of guys are like, ooh, if you move him in the slot corner, he's kind of irrelevant. But I think that slot position, both offensively and defensively, are really changing him. You see on offense, Cooper Kupp is in the slot. They're starting to put Justin Jefferson in the slot more and more, CeeDee Lamb, those kind of guys. And you need guys to cover these brand new, really good slot receivers. It used to be Cole Beasley was the slot receiver, just short, quick. Wes Welker gets those routes, gets you know, minimal yak, but gets the first down when you need it. But you need guys to start locking them up. And that's why I think Trey is going to be a highly sought after corner. And if he plays really well, he's going to have a long, long career in the NFL. And, you know, he may be a highly paid corner if he can really lock down that slot. Because, again, the slot receiver position is becoming more and more popular, especially when you look at this class with a bunch of guys that are short and skinny, but super fast, run really good routes with good hands. Those are slot receivers. Jackson Smith and Jigba may be exclusively a slot receiver. So if you're lining up against a guy like JSN, you need to put a very good corner on him. And I think that these slot corners are going to be turned into a premium. And as you know, the higher picked you get, the more money you make.
Yeah. What about Dylan Horton? Dylan Horton is 6'4", 275, had a massive game against Michigan. That could not have hurt his stock, but you have him going to Jacksonville, I believe, in the sixth round. What is that kind of the range you see? Is six kind of the is could he go earlier, or do you think he, you know, more likely goes sixth or later?
He could go earlier. His average rank is 186th. I have him going 185th, so kind of right in there. Albeit I looked at the average rank, scrolled to who was picking around that range and started looking at schemes. With defense, it's so much about scheme. Just like Trevias, it's in D Winters we'll talk about here soon. It's all about scheme. Offense is about talent and can we build around you? Defense is, do you fit our scheme? And the TCU defensive scheme under Joe Gillespie, first of all, Gillespie, fantastic coordinator. I think he's a great coach. Really excited to see what he does with the Frogs moving forward. But he's got a unique scheme. He's got those three down linemen, but those defensive ends, quote unquote ends, aren't really ends. They're five techniques, which means they're lining up on the inside shoulder of the tackle. And then he's walking up other guys. They call it maybe Joker or a Razor, Dagger, whatever terminology, Star, whatever they're using for that. They're kind of stand-up linebackers. That's where you see Trevon Walker, who's the 101 last year to Jacksonville. They use him as that stand-up guy, sometimes hand of the dirt, as a fourth or fifth man on the line of scrimmage. But Dylan Horton is going to be a full hand in the dirt, three down five tech who fits the system really well, just because that's what he did at TCU. That's what Jacksonville does. And there's not really a ton of NFL defenses that run that scheme. That's why I think he's a nice fit in Jacksonville. And again, you got to look at fit. He did have meetings with the Steelers and the Buccaneers. I do think, though, that he fits in nicely with the Jaguars, better than either of those other teams. But yeah, he definitely could go earlier.
So what is D Winters ideal scheme look like? I know, like, you know, probably he starts as maybe a special teams guy, but when he does move into a linebacker role, if he does, what's that scheme look like? And I mean, I guess you have him mocked. Do you have him
Browns?
Yeah. So yeah. I guess what's that scheme look like?
Yeah, you're gonna have to find somebody where a position where he isn't in the box linebacker. He's never gonna line up as a Mike. He's never gonna probably never be a true in the box linebacker in a three linebacker system, just because he's undersized. He's super fast. He can cover well, and he's a tackling machine. No doubt about it there. But if I'm an NFL GM, I'm looking at him to be like, Dude, I want to use a safety. I want to use that free floating, you know, when you talk about the 3-3-5, that kind of positionless box safety that comes down. Again, that joker, that razor, dagger, whatever, star. That's the position I want D Winters in, just because he's a little bit undersized. And he's a kind of guy where at that size, especially in the NFL, if a guard or a tackle gets his hands on you, you're done. And I'm speaking from experience. I was a very undersized linebacker when I played way back when. And when a line offensive lineman got their hands on me, I was done. I was out of the play. That was it. And I see that with D Winters a lot. But he's so fast and so athletic that a team is going to want him. And I think my Cleveland Browns are a nice spot for him. First of all, we need a ton of linebacker depth. We just got decimated last year and had no linebackers. But he's kind of this special gadget player where you're absolutely right. He is going to start on special teams. That's where he's going to start. Make a few plays, work your way in. But I could really see him kind of being that floating fifth box safety where he's big enough to take on tight ends, but also has good enough pass coverage skills to where those Mark Andrews, who he would see twice a year in division, Pat Freiermuth, those kind of guys, and whoever the Bengals take, that he can line up against them and cover them well and keep step for step with them. Because it's so hard to find a linebacker like Fred Warner in San Francisco, who's big and bad and can tackle, but can also take a slot receiver up the seam. D Winters can take a slot receiver up the seam. He's fast enough. He ran a 4.46, I think it was, at the combine, which is just outrageously fast. But I like him as a football player. They list him as a linebacker. I'm not sure he's really going to be drafted with that intent, probably more of a box safety.
Okay. There are a lot of guys who like make a career out of being really good on special teams. Is that something you could see D Winters making a career of, being a really solid special teams guy?
Absolutely. Matthew Slater for the Patriots is a very highly, very well-paid player. He's had a long NFL career, and they re-signed him because he's such a stud on special teams. And boy, if you have a bad special teams unit, it's more exaggerated in college. Like, if you have bad special teams, you are going to lose. But I always like to bring up the example of the San Diego Chargers that had LaDainian Tomlinson on their team, had the number one offense in the league, had the number one defense in the league, and did not make the playoffs because their special teams were truly that bad. So I do think that there is a place for D Winters. This is the kind of coach's player, right? The coach is going to be, I love this guy. He hustles. He tries hard. And if he can make a career out of special teams, my man, do it. Do it. You're out on the field for 7, 8, 9 plays a game, and they'll pay you a $15 million, you know, $20 million contract to do so. So absolutely.
Out of all the guys in your mocks that you have, what guy do you like to fit the best for the team you chose him for?
That's an excellent question. It's hands down Dylan Horton. I love the fit in Jacksonville there. It's so much to the point where, like, when I put that on paper, I'm like, oh, duh. Like, when I was looking at their alignments, I'm like, that's what Dylan did at TCU. Like, it's perfect. Again, 5-tech. It's interesting because he's going to be listed as an edge. But again, when you look at it, he's kind of more, if you think back to, like, really harkening back, like the Bear, the 6'2", where you'd have true 5-techs and a nose guard and then defensive ends that were all at the time hand in the dirt too, which doesn't work anymore. But he's kind of that. He's that three. He's that lining up on the inside or outside shade of the tackle with his hand in the dirt, and he's technically a defensive end. But if you put that tight end on the outside, he's not going to bump out to the outside. He's not standing up. He's not doing a lot of coverage or anything like that. I absolutely love that fit in Jacksonville.
All right, I think it's time. I've held off for long enough. I was reading your mock and I was really enjoying it. It was all good. And then I scroll to the bottom, get to the end, see Max Duggan of the Cowboys, and I just love it. And I just want to know, like, is it looking like it could happen? I mean, I know that Jerry Jones loves Max. He's said it a million times. Like, is this something I could really start getting excited about?
I think so. I mean, when Jerry Jones says he wants a guy, he's going to go out and get that guy. You know, Dallas is in need of a quarterback depth. And it's not always about need. I mean, they gave Ezekiel Elliott a ton of money, like a bag of money, because that was his guy. Yeah. They paid Zeke before they paid Dak, because Zeke is just Jerry Jones's guy. And when Jerry Jones wants a guy, he's just going to go out and get him. It would be so good for Max too. Keep him in the Metroplex. He's already a local legend. Like,
big hero. Yeah.
You keep him in town. Exactly. It just makes sense. Seriously, if you're Dallas and you bring in Max Duggan, you are going to sell preseason tickets because people want to go see Max. in a Cowboys uniform. I think it'd be great for this. It just makes too much sense, right? It's not
It
even
does.
about does he fit with the team? Is he gonna get drafted highly? Is he even gonna start? Like, it doesn't matter. He's just, you know, he could get picked in round five, he could get picked in round seven. But I really do think that if the end of that draft is coming up, Jerry Jones is gonna call Max up and be like, we want you and we're gonna pick you. So it just feels right.
Yeah, I know for sure I would rush to the Cowboys store and get a Duggan jersey. I know a ton of TCU fans that would
So
do the
many people
same.
would. Oh, so many people would. Yeah. And the nice thing is he's met with the Cowboys, Buccaneers, and also the Texans. So there is a chance that he stays in the state of Texas, even if it is going to Houston.
What's Max's kind of range, round range? What would you say, like, the highest he could go is, and I guess the lowest, could he be undrafted? I don't know.
I don't think he'll be undrafted just because, again, that infatuation. Like, if pick 244 comes around as the Cowboys' final pick, you're dart
Take
throwing,
him.
you're taking him, right? Like, who else are you going to throw a dart at? It doesn't even matter if he turns out to even contribute really much to your organization besides just being a guy that you know fans will root for. I think round five is probably he's a day three guy. Let's just put him in that kind of category. I don't see him going earlier than five. Because you know you're still drafting for positional need earlier on, or if you're taking best player available, and this isn't a slight against Max because I've been very anti-Max Duggan for the longest until he just proved me wrong for 13 straight weeks. Now I want nothing but see him succeed. But when you're talking about best player available in the fourth round, it's just to be honest, like Max Duggan is not that guy. He's not going to be. There's going to be offensive linemen and corners and guys that really kind of are up there. But round five. If Dallas is like, we want this guy so, and I keep harping on Dallas, it's like he can't go anywhere else. But if Dallas is like, we want this guy so badly, we're just going to use our fifth round pick on him. Bam, he's drafted. So I could see him going as high as five, as low as seven. I don't believe he's going to go undrafted, and I'd be really surprised if he went day two.
So you have a couple guys in your article that you have undrafted: Alana Lee, Tay Barber. I know Amari DiMercato could be another guy. Like, out of those three guys, who's the guy that has the best chance at hearing his name called on maybe that Sunday of the draft?
Yeah, I hate this
Saturday.
because I don't want anybody to be undrafted. And I don't want this to be like a personal slight against Allen or Tay or Amari or anybody. You know, it's just kind of I'm looking at rankings. These are not my personal rankings. I'm not looking at Allen and being like, well, he's not good enough to play in the end. That's not true. But I do think Allen is probably the one that'll get drafted. He is a super high football IQ. I mean, every scouting report you read about him from high school through when he transferred and then into the NFL. Everything about him is just he's a high IQ guy, and NFL guys want that. So even if he goes on draft, and there's a chance he could get drafted in the sixth or seventh round, no problem at all. He's a center, so he's a specialist. They might kick him out to guard. We'll see. But you want a high IQ guy, especially in a center. You need him to figure things out. So he might be a late round, maybe, you know, if there's not a place for him on an active roster, he's definitely going to be around at camps. He is going to be at someone's camp, hands down. There's no question about that. And he's a guy that's going to give your starting offense a look at the beginning. Because he's smart, he knows he can figure things out. And that doesn't mean that he can't work his way up. There's plenty of guys that are undrafted or seventh round guys. Adam Thielen, if you want to talk about someone who's risen to stardom from being undrafted, not a bad thing. There's only 259 spots, I think it is this year with the compensatory picks. Only 259 guys get drafted. That's an average of two a team. And we're talking about 10 guys on TCU or more. So it's just a numbers problem. I think Allen's going to land on a roster. I believe he'll be at camp. Again, just stud smart guy that will get brought in. And I hate to say it, they're going to go on draft. I really don't mean it personally against any of them because I want to see them all get drafted. It'd be amazing for the school, be amazing for the team, and it'd be amazing for them. Realistically, though, he just average rankings, he falls outside of 259.
Well, Brett, that's about all I have. I really, really appreciate you coming on. This was a lot of fun. Anything else I've forgotten?
No, I think you hit it all. This is a really exciting draft class, potentially TCU's best ever draft class, most extensive ever. I'll be watching. I'll be watching to see where they go anxiously.
Should be a fun weekend. And actually, from when we're recording, it's a week from today, right? It's first round.
Yeah. Week from today in about 2 hours.
Yeah. So very exciting. We're going to get to see where these guys go. Brett, thank you so much for coming on. A lot of fun. I really appreciate it. I wanted to do a draft thing for a long time, and I'm glad this worked out.
Yeah. Thank you, Davis. This was a lot of fun. Love talking football.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, I told you it was going to be a good one, and it was, in my opinion. That was super fun. Once again, thank you, Brett, for coming on, talking NFL draft. It's a wonderful time of the year. Love to be talking football in April. Love to be talking TCU football in April, too. Super fun. So again, Brett, thank you. And you know what? Thank you to all of you guys for listening or watching or whatever you're doing. I really do appreciate it. It means a lot to me. So keep coming back. We're doing it once a week. Anyway, that's about all I have. Thank you for tuning in. Tune in next week. Go Frogs and stay classy.